The Contenders is a proud member of the Cage Club Podcast Network.
For other great shows about movies and pop culture, go visit cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
How long do you plan to be in town?
Oh, I'll be out of your hair as soon as I track down the Skrulls that are infiltrating your planet.
You struggle with your emotions, with your past which fuels them.
About to show these boys how we do it. You ready?
Higher, further, faster, baby.
That's right.
Welcome to The Contenders, the show about the movies made by and starring women who refuse to play by the rules. I'm Tobin Addington.
And I'm Aislinn Addington. And today we're talking about 2019, that's right, folks, still in the theater, Captain Marvel.
Captain Marvel. Do you now? Are you a Marvel Cinematic Universe universe completist? What's your status?
That's a great question, because the answer to that is easy. No, I am several Marvel Cinematic Universes behind.
Ah.
And to be honest, and you know how I will respond to each and every comment on Twitter.
Yes.
When folks pitched to me what we're heading toward right now, which is that all the different pieces are going to come together and you get to see this person and that person and all the things together at one, that did not super appeal to me. I think my ability to compartmentalize is really key to my life. And so I prefer my Guardians in their galaxy. I prefer my, you know, Avengers in their moment. And I don't know where I prefer Ant-Man back in Clueless, I think. So,
yes.
So I can certainly point to experiences with the Marvel Cinematic Universe that I have really enjoyed. I think that first Iron Man was really fun when it happened.
Yep.
I thoroughly enjoyed the first Avengers because I love a band of misfits. And
right, you do. Yeah.
That's how it was pitched to me. And I, at that time, had a you know, significant long-term affection for Joss Whedon. We're just not going to get into today.
No. Don't have to.
And then you pointed out to me that Winter Soldier is an excellent film. Kind of a little bit independent of the superness.
Yeah, right. I think so. Yeah, yeah.
But I am behind. I am behind, period. How about you, Tobin? Are you all up to date?
I am up to date, although I am weary.
Yeah.
There's just so many of them, and they come out so often. And I have found that especially as the main, you know, as Infinity War came out, especially, and even you and I saw Civil War in the theater together, and I fell asleep in the middle of it for a little bit. Like, it was literally weary. I find that I need more space in between the watching the movies. That's just my watching experience is better if I have extra time in between watching them. Otherwise, it's just too much. However, I recently, so my 7-year-old son has seen in the theater. I took him to Spider-Man Homecoming. That was his first Marvel, like, live action seeing it in the movie theater movie. And then I took him to Captain Marvel. And at that point I realized, okay, like he's probably old enough to see a few of these others. So I've recently embarked on a sort of curated, carefully curated, trip through the Marvel Cinematic Universe, like trying to be appropriate for his, sort of level as I can be. So we've watched, the first Captain America movie and the first Thor movie and then Avengers. And to watch Avengers, which is a movie that I remember liking, but I sort of have kind of forgotten it, to watch the original Avengers movie with a 7-year-old who's never seen live action Hulk swoop through and like smash something or save something. Like, my son lifted off the couch. Like he was just levitating. He was in, and I think has so much to do with how beautifully constructed that movie is. I think it's a, like it sets the template for everything moving forward. And so I'm sort of becoming re-energized by the Marvel Cinematic Universe through watching some of the movies with my son. But otherwise I come to these movies kind of reluctantly. Like it feels a little bit more like obligation than it does excitement.
Hmm. Interesting. And I guess I don't share the quite as strong of an obligation.
Uh-huh. Yeah. sure.
But I guess I didn't realize how far behind I was till I noticed the ones that are now on Netflix.
Oh yeah. Okay.
I haven't seen. Like, oh gosh, I haven't. That's been a minute. But I mean I have enjoyed. I think I also just wanted to acknowledge that I very much enjoyed Black Panther as well.
Yes, for sure. Yeah.
And that is the first one until this one that the soundtrack was so much fun to me. And so that was the Spotify mix for a while was Black Panther. And then of course this, because anyone who knows me knows how much I love the 90s.
The only thing you like more than a band of misfits is the 90s.
Oh my goodness. So then
for this movie, were you excited for it? Were you interested beyond us doing a podcast about it? Like where did this one fit just as a movie in your sort of excitement?
Well, I had no idea who Captain Marvel was.
Me neither.
And then I heard the announcement, I think probably Huffington Post style announcement, that Brie Larson, who I have been a fan of for a long time.
Yeah.
I'm a United States of Terra fan. That's kind of the first thing I really saw her in, and then tried to follow her in other things, you know, Short Term 12.
Yeah. There you go.
Room, the various things people know her from. So I more was excited about her than just the phrase Captain Marvel meant nothing to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, okay, great. Okay. And then you could sort of see in the news, and by the news, I mean entertainment news, updates of her posting workouts or her, you know, posting a bit of a costume or, you know, I could tell there was excitement for it. I just didn't know enough to be excited, like fully. And then when I saw the trailer, then I was on board. And so, I was glad that we decided to do it. So I had a push to go to it in the theater and enjoy it as I did. How about you?
I had a very similar experience in terms of being aware, you know, just aware of it. And since I have seen all the other ones, I mean, I was excited for, you know, a female-led Marvel movie. That is a thing I was interested in, especially since I loved Wonder Woman so much. And I was, you know, I'm always sort of hoping for that high again, basically in every movie I go to. Yeah. Most importantly, I think again with my son, I was excited that there was, based on the reviews and the sense I got from the trailers, it felt like a movie that would be, because Infinity War is a pretty dark movie, mm-hmm. and Civil War is pretty kind of convoluted, and you know, might have to do a lot of explaining, and this felt like something that would be pitched more at his level, mm-hmm. and so I was sort of excited for him to experience that with me, and so I took him with me when I went to go see the movie, and I was sort of as excited for a Marvel movie as I can be to go see this movie.
Excellent. Now that you've primed us for the excitement that we should all have watching this movie, what are two bits of film history for this current movie?
The first one is a product of how these Marvel movies are made. So the two original screenwriters of this movie are Nicole Perlman and Meg LaFauve, I'm going to guess is how we pronounce that. Meg, I hope we're getting your name right. And they were hired to write the script out of, as I understand it, kind of like a writer's room for these movies. Like they get a bunch of writers together and they're all kind of pitching their takes on the characters. What would you do? Which you know, sort of storyline might you tell? And then they sort of choose who's going to write the movie out of that. I'm simplifying the process a lot, but that's basically how it kind of goes. Nicole Perlman wrote the original Guardians of the Galaxy script that James Gunn revised for the movie. So they were hired to write this movie, and then they kept having to wait to write the script for like a year and a half because Marvel kept changing when they were going to have this movie come out, right? So this is a movie that is built to be part of a much larger machine, like a much larger story. And so she was going to show up in other, like in Civil War or other Avenger-ish movies. And then they kept sort of revising where she was going to show up and how and why. And which is, you think about it, as like a screenwriter, you're then waiting to figure out how your movie, you have to keep retrofitting your movie to fit into this larger thing.
Figure out which premise they're going to let you.
Right. Which is just wild. It's kind of a wild.
It'll be frustrating, I think.
I guess it feels more like TV, right? Like you've got an idea for an episode and you have to kind of wait and see when they're going to drop it. Mm-hmm. The other bit of film history is that history of the movie after it's come out. This is the first movie with a woman director. It's a co-director, but a woman director to make more than $1 billion.
Wow.
A live action. I should say live action film because Frozen was the first movie of any kind co-directed by a woman to make over $1 billion. But for live action movies, this is it. We are talking about it today.
Mm. History right here on the podcast, folks.
That's right. So, Aislinn, who are the ladies who made this history? Can you take us through the ladies in charge, women involved in major roles in Captain Marvel?
Happy to attempt the names. First, we have I'm going to start again.
Yep.
First, in the writers category, we have Anna Boden, Geneva Robertson-Dworet, Nicole Perlman, and Meg LaFauve. Co-director, Anna Boden. Actors, Brie Larson, Annette Bening, Lashana Lynch. And producers, Victoria Alonso, Mary Levanos, and Patricia Witcher. Lots of ladies in charge.
Lots of ladies. Does it show, right? That's one of our questions.
That is one of the questions.
Yeah.
Okay. Tobin, gosh, keeping in mind that this, like you say, is a piece of a much larger franchise puzzle. Could you help us with just a something of a summary?
Yeah. So I'm just going to kind of wing this a little bit because the ones I found online don't fit and I haven't had time to write one. So I'm just going to, in broad strokes, wing it. This is the story of a woman who is an alien. She's part of an alien. She's fighting like an alien war. And she discovers in the course of sort of this mission ends up taking her to Earth in the 1990s, where she teams up with a young Samuel L. Jackson to sort of track down this thing and solve this mystery. And in doing so, uncovers her true identity, which was that she began life as a human named Carol Danvers. She was Air Force pilot, like a fancy, like, you know, experimental jet pilot who was like turned into this like hybrid alien like warrior thing. And so the movie then ends up being rather than being just her sort of tracking down the person or the stuff she's trying to sort of uncover, ends up uncovering her true identity, who she is and who she's sort of always been. And in doing so, like there's all kinds of reversals of who are the bad guys and who are the good guys, and she finally gets that all figured out and then like goes on this like beautiful warrior thing at the end and, you know, shows off her powers.
Great. Yeah. I
mean, you know, broad strokes here.
Yes. So yeah, and for folks, depending on how you edit that, Tobin, it is really fun to watch. It is hard to explain.
Yes. Right.
because of the back and the forth and the time travel and the disguises. There are shapeshifters in this movie, which is one of my least favorite tropes.
Oh, is it? Interesting. Yeah.
It just is so frustrating. I think this one I liked, or I appreciated the rules that they set up pretty early on that I felt like they stuck to.
Mm-hmm.
That's not always what you get with a shapeshifter character. But so, you know, I was appreciative that I felt like I, as the audience, could also have the kind of the same code to mm-hmm. understand if they were truly the identity they were claiming to be.
Right.
But yeah. So there's just kind of a lot. And then in all the 90s stuff, then you get a lot of cutesy, but it's 90s cutesy. So I'll allow it.
Can I tell you our mother's reaction to this movie?
Please. I don't know what it is.
So I got a text, not out of the blue. We were texting about other things, but I hadn't mentioned, like we hadn't been talking about this movie, but she texted me and to say, I listened to your Lost in Translation podcast and then went to see Captain Marvel at the theater. And then in parentheses, she said, a movie that could also be called Lost in Translation in my book. Which I thought was
funny.
That's a great two sentence review of because it is like the plot is convoluted, like the, yes. The events, the, it doesn't feel, well, to me anyway, it did not feel like overly complicated as I'm watching it. But as you try and summarize it, it, I don't know, it's like a tongue twister.
Sure. And I felt that that's, I think, parallel to my experience with Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, sure. Interesting.
But yeah, I just want to say real quick, I feel like our dad gets more of the credit for being funny, and he is funny, but like,
he's funny.
That's a
yeah.
good one, Mama.
That's good, isn't it? Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's pretty cleaver, as we would say.
Cleaver as in meat,
cleaver
as we say.
Cleaver as in meat. Yeah. Just really bringing in the fans who are not yeah. familiar with us. So
there are like three people who just took a shot, actually.
Oh my God. Yes. Please, listeners, if you have come up with a drinking game, I want you to share it with me. I didn't know that was a life goal till just now, but it has become one. That and having a conference room named after me. So two of my life goals. I feel like a building, that's too much to ask. Conference room? Sure. In any case, it starts off with a training montage. Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. A dream into a training montage. So it's like confusing from the beginning. And then there's Jude Law. Just hanging out. And I have to say, I don't think, no disrespect to him, I think he played the part well. But every time I see him, I assume he's going to end up being the bad guy.
Oh, like, interesting. Interesting.
He has that look about him. Like, I find him shifty.
Shifty. Yeah. Right.
So I was skeptical of it. And especially the way in that first scene. And so this, I was rolling my feminist eyes a little bit in the way as a Kree warrior, because that is the species of alien.
Species. Yeah.
He kept sort of like trying to get her to dampen her emotions.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's not how you're going to win and blah, blah, blah. And so I felt like, okay, they're really setting us up for she's going to tap
yeah.
into something and then defeat him.
Right.
I was found a little tropey of like, I don't know, because I think there's a reading of that that's hysterical woman.
Sure. 100%.
And I, to fast forward more to the end, I found the big climactic battles in this much more appealing than some of the other Marvel Cinematic Universe. So
100%.
I've never been so compelled
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
As I was in this. And that's including Wonder Woman, to be honest. Like,
oh, interesting. Interesting. Okay.
So we
well, you mean
battles.
In terms of climactic battles. Yeah. I get you. For sure. For sure.
But so I could feel his sleaze. From pretty early on, I think, but that might also be a Jude Law Ian thing.
One of the things I think is so really smart about this movie is that if you watch that, the opening 15, 20 minutes, it feels like it's sort of a by the books origin story. You know, this is the point where he, where the mentor gives her the lesson that she's going to have to spend the whole movie learning, and that she's finally going to learn it. And that's going to be the thing that allows her to do whatever she does. And what I think is really smart about this movie is it does that right at the place you expect it to. And it's doing it well with actors who are appealing and who have presence. And, but then actually the movie's not about that. The movie is about her finding her own way and deliberately not taking the lessons that, you know, and especially at the very, very end, like, very pointedly not taking his lessons and that being that being where she finds her power, that I think is it's a misdirect in a movie full of misdirection that at the moment feels like, oh, this is just the way these movies start, when actually it's leading us sort of like we're being led astray in a kind of smart way, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree. So while it annoyed me at the beginning, I sort of then appreciated it when I circled back to it later. And, and with the many Mr. X, I have to say also, I generally don't have my phone on in movies.
Good for you.
Thank you. But I got a text that led me to believe I needed a follow-up call. I happened to leave. And I've been in movies where you've done that as well, my friend.
I happened to walk
out into the hallway to deal with the situation. It turns out I did need to answer that phone call. It all worked out. Came back.
Oh, good.
and Josh leaned over and said, okay, the good guys are the bad guys and the bad guys are the good guys.
Yes. Yes.
Said, oh, great. Perfect. Okay. No, I'm right. So I sort of say that in part just to say that I didn't start having fun really until we were on Earth. Mm-hmm. Right. There's a mission and she's taken prisoner and they're doing mind tricks on her, to try to find information. And they appear to be green aliens who are vaguely British.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
Who are searching through her mind and we're in that, we're kind of having the experience she's having of not things being fuzzy and not being able to understand and why am I on Earth and all this. And then she crash lands in a Blockbuster.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
And then that's where it's like the fish out of water, having fun. It's the kind of reverse Galaxy Quest.
Yes. Yes.
Sort of thing. And we meet not only Samuel L. Jackson, but my good friend, Clark Gregg.
Yes, we do.
I have to say, one of my favorite things about the Marvel Cinematic Universe is what it has done for Clark Gregg. Mm-hmm. It just feels good to me that this is has not given him a career, because he had a career and he's done a lot of other things.
Sure. Yeah.
But like has bolstered his career in such a way that and that I feel like the fans of the universe have so embraced every man kind of thing.
It's really fun to go back and watch especially the Avengers, that original Avengers, but even Thor, like to see him in the early things. Like he is remarkably consistent, you know, and but I'm sure it's fun for him and Samuel L. Jackson to play, you know, younger versions of these characters that they played now for so long, like playing for 15 years, these characters. But I smile every time he comes on screen, for sure. And just as one of your catnips is, do we say that? As one of your favorite things is the Band of Misfits. I love a fish out of water story. I am primed for 90s fish out of water, like Alien. I think this is like, I'm on board.
What could be better?
We should talk briefly about Annette Bening, because she shows up before this too, both in these sort of vague kind of memory. We don't know if they're memories or visions or whatever they are. And then also as the face of the, like the AI, like what is it called? The Supreme Intelligence or something?
So clearly that was interesting. I don't like that word, but it just was. as much as I've just said, the Lee Pace of it all, the Kree story that I was first became aware of with Guardian of the Galaxy. Guardian of the Galaxy? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Didn't know where to put the S there. Guardian of the Galaxy. I'm not really on board. I just don't understand their deal. And someone is welcome to explain it to me. It just has not resonated with me, so I haven't dug into it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so this is the first time I was like, oh, interesting. I kind of want to know more. Mm-hmm. But if you are Cree, then kind of as part of there, it felt sort of religious. Is that the right word?
Yeah. Yeah. Their faith structure or their,
Yeah. But that each individual person would see, it sounded like a being or at least something that they recognized as not an authority, but as a, perhaps an authority or a kindred spirit or something that they ultimately trusted.
Right. Source of wisdom, trusted source of wisdom kind of thing. Yeah.
So our main character, Captain Marvel, Vers, as they call her at the beginning,
right,
sees a human looking woman or Cree woman that she doesn't know why that's what she sees. But then there's a whole thing of, it felt kind of mantra ish to me. Like you're not supposed to tell someone who you see.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's private, but it's understood that everyone sees something different. I guess maybe that's where I took it to a more religious place, but a certainly kind of a personal connection to the universe kind of.
Right.
So we see her there, but she's just appearing as a channeling whatever the universal power is,
the Cree power, their source of control over their people or their creatures or their whatever it is. I don't fully understand the whole Cree thing. I agree with you. And I don't know that it really, at least I'm hoping it doesn't really matter.
Right.
Like to understand all the ins and outs of how all this works. But I love an Annette Bening. Again,
I knew you would. But here's what I think it worked. I think she was a good fit for both of the characters she played.
Yes. Yes.
But it also then felt like, oh, this is the thing we're doing now.
Right.
Because isn't it Glenn Close's and Guardians? And it's different, but it was reminiscent to me of the three ladies in Wrinkle in Time, where you have Oprah as the, kind of ultimate knowledge and understanding. And so it was I don't mean that in a bad way per se, because I love kind of honoring powerful women. So
yeah.
If this is what we're going to do now, great, let's do it. But it was, I don't know. I almost felt like without knowing what the story was, I could have said, okay, then we'll have an Annette Bening type.
Yes, right, right.
Being this.
Right.
The supreme wisdom.
I did prefer her in her human form. When she's playing Dr. Wendy Lawson, like
that bitch in leather jacket.
That leather jacket is great. And she is I liked all the Earth stuff better. So maybe that's part of why. But I thought it was, I don't know. And it is true, a little bit like, okay, this is the first female-led Marvel superhero. So we have to have, also a woman in charge. And like it had a little bit of that feel to it too. But because it's Annette Bening and she's, she doesn't do false. She doesn't play false. So I'm with her. But let's get back to what you were saying about arriving in a Blockbuster Video. And now we are in 90s Earth.
Now we're in 90s Earth, and with these characters that we have seen so many times in, kind of what I thought was modern day.
Right.
So how was that for you? How was I all due respect, is it CGI? Is it just makeup? How is Samuel L. Jackson in the mid 90s?
It's CGI. It's digital making. It's the same. I guess I don't know if it's the same. Having just rewatched the first Captain America movie with my son, where they made in many of the shots, it's Chris Evans that they've just shrunk him. They've shriveled him to make him
having flashbacks of that.
Yeah. It's a great movie to watch again. It's maybe not great, but it's a very good movie. And it's a very satisfying movie to see again, especially since as it came out, it felt like punching knots, like, him punching Hitler and fighting Nazis felt like a kind of, whimsical throwback thing. And there's something even more deeply satisfying to see that happen, today. Sadly, that has to be that case. But I found it very satisfying.
Okay. I'll give it a try. I think I fell asleep when I watched it last.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's yeah, I like it. I like it a lot. It's no Winter Soldier, but it's, I think it's, I think it's very good. But so this is a technique that can sometimes hit that uncanny valley thing, right? Where we're, it's so close to being perfectly human that it gets a little eerie. And there were times for me that Samuel L. Jackson was a little, oh, I'm just kind of like eyebrows aren't moving quite the right way with the smile and the, like, it looks a little weird, but in general, I just sort of bought it. I went with it. How did you find it? Did you find it off-putting at all?
At the very beginning I did, but also I'm so behind in Marvel movies that that part was kind of okay. I think Clark Gregg was a little bit more unsettling for me. And then what I loved, he was doing his job at the beginning. They were both doing their jobs, and there's been this disturbance, and I wasn't entirely clear on how much of the super special stuff he was already aware of or not.
Right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But you know, it's that kind of by the book and whatever. But and so I don't expect him to fully believe her at first. But then once he's in the car, here's what it is. He didn't believe her, but he listened to her enough that then when he was in the car with his partner, he was able to tell, not quite fast enough, but fast enough to survive, that his partner was exhibiting the behaviors that she had warned about the shapeshifters doing.
Right, right.
And then from then on, he trusted her and he was on her team. He did call the backup at one point, but I wasn't upset with him for that. That made sense to me in the moment.
Mm-hmm, right. Yeah. Yeah.
He was using his resources to do what, you know, kind of what he thought was best. But so I guess I really appreciated that, and this is totally a separate issue, but, in other podcasts that I listen to, there's a little bit of true crime, not a lot because I'm squeamish, but like there's some things that I had listened to recently, the retelling of a case about police misconduct and how the way they were getting away with it was that they were abusing what they call frequent flyers that in this case were women that were brought in on low level charges a lot and people weren't believing them. And so they were reporting things and then they would be attributed to drug use or trying to get out of being in trouble or these things. And like, and that's not just police, but in any sort of power differential, that's a tactic that abusers will use to continue to abuse. And so that flashed for me here of like, he easily could have dismissed her as, you know, crazy or dismissed her as intoxicated or whatever. But he listened enough that then they were both able to move forward and together. So that I really liked. Sorry, that was a long way to say. No. I liked that.
This is, you know, what's so cool is that you're pinpointing for me why I like that so much. I don't know that I had the sort of vocabulary to put it all together, but as you're saying that, I'm like, yes, that's right. That's exactly how I felt about that. And that I thought that worked. I thought that worked so well.
It worked. Yeah. I loved it. And there was something, wasn't there something kind of like cutesy marvelly about where they went? They went to the underground bunkery place.
Right. Right. But before that, they go and they get their the jacket and isn't that before that where she gets the jacket and the motorcycle, or is that after that? I can't remember where she's.
Okay. Seriously. I'm so sorry. As we figure out what happened.
It's been longer for me since I haven't seen this movie.
they're separated. She runs and they're kind of, they're fighting with and chasing after two different of the shapeshifters. And there's the thing, it was in the trailer, I believe one of the trailers where she's on an above ground subway. Mm-hmm. Or she's on a train, whatever, and punches an old lady, and it's because the old lady isn't an old lady.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
So she, through clues, ends up at this bar where the, you know, Air Force kids hung out.
Right. That's right.
He ends up there too, and then they start to work together.
That's right. That's right. That's before.
She stole the bike and the clothes from outside some stores. Like she.
Right.
she stole a bike, but you know, I don't know. He was rude. And then they go, cause they're trying to find the plane manufacturer.
Sure. Well, yeah, the secret, the place where this, yeah, the, where the planes were.
The planes were.
Or the plans for the planes or something. I whatever the MacGuffin is at that point.
The cat, correct?
Yes.
The cat's in like the catacombs, if you will.
Oh, that's right. Yes, exactly. Exactly. As they're in the, in that facility. Yeah. Right. So can I pause here 1 second? And sure. I think there's something we need to address is that the, one of the criticisms of this movie that, that I've heard from, not just sort of from like critics online and certainly not from like trolls online, although I'm sure it's there too. I just don't pay attention. I try not to sort of engage with that, but from people that I really trust or people who, and whose opinions I really respect has to do with Brie Larson's performance.
Okay. Let's talk about it.
So I'm wondering what your reaction was to her as this particular Marvel superhero. Do I need to set that up more?
No, I liked it. And oh. And I like this better than like going through the movie because it's so convoluted. So
yeah.
Feel free to clean up as much as plot shit.
No, I think it's good that we, no, I think it's good. But it just felt like we now have been with her in the movie enough.
Yeah. Let's,
it's like, what's your take on how she's doing this?
It's an interesting character because she doesn't, you know, let's compare it to Wonder Woman just a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
Wonder Woman also is in a number of fish out of water situations,
mm-hmm.
but she, what is in the Wonder Woman movie, I have not seen the other Justice Leagues. Apologies.
Neither have I.
But she has, and I think what part of what is so charming and aspirational about Wonder Woman is she has such a strong sense of self throughout. That's not what's shaken, and that's not what she has to figure out. And this is very different because someone has infiltrated her mind and uncovered things that she can't explain.
Mm-hmm,
and, and it feels like, cause then we go back further to the very beginning where she's having these dreams and they wake her up and she's emotional about it because it's either some kind of broken self bits in there.
Right.
So I 100% believe her as playing this character who, because her motivation and Samuel Jackson's motivation are totally different.
Mm-hmm.
She's trying to figure out kind of where she belongs and why certain things are familiar to her and certain things aren't. And he's trying to figure out why there are aliens on the planet and what we need to do to save people. I mean, that's my interpretation of it. And then, you know, by the end their goals align in such a way that they can get things done. But so I think she's a very different, and this is a very different kind of piece of her story than maybe the Wonder Woman that we saw.
Mm-hmm.
I liked her. I felt unsure in the moments that she was unsure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That mm-hmm. worked for me. I think it's a difficult hero to play, I think, especially
totally.
When we put it in the Marvel pantheon,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
where you have all these like cocky as fuck dudes.
Yes, yes, yes.
I mean, and which again, in their time when they came about kind of one by one, had their own, their bravado had some charm, right?
Right.
For a while, Iron Man shtick did it for me.
Yeah, exactly.
Him next to, and I love me some Cap, but like also there's that. I mean, he's just so kind of rigid in his righteousness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That I don't, there's not, this is very, very different from kind of all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I, to be fair, I don't know because I don't know the, beyond the films, I don't know what, Olsen.
Oh, Olsen. Scarlet Witch.
Thank you. Much as can I just say very attracted to her in whichever one she shows up in the first time, but, you know, the both the Avengers, women Avengers that we have so far, play such a different, I don't know, kind of level than the hands on your hips superheroes. That that it's kind of, I think it's a hard group to have an identity in that is not just pure cocksure bravado.
Right, right, right.
And so while I would much rather hang out with her than maybe any of the others, I can see where it doesn't feel super.
Yes, right.
To critics, and I, apologies, I don't know a lot of what people are reacting to. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and also, but also her thing, like, if they didn't want cool, and by cool, I don't mean like sunglasses cool. I mean like subtle and subdued. Mm-hmm. If they didn't want cool, sarcastic, figuring it out, they shouldn't, they wouldn't have hired her.
Right, right, right.
What do you think? That was a long answer.
I think she is so fucking good in this movie.
It was easier for you to explain.
You've hit three things. It's going to sound like I'm just repeating. I'm not going to repeat you, but I'm going to show where we intersect. Because I had the complaint lodged against her and lodged against the movie is that she is kind of a little bit kind of wet blanket in the movie, like a little subdued, as you said. And I think to me it was such an antidote to, and I had the word bravado written down in my notes of that's the mode, not just of the characters, but of the movies.
Yes.
Of all the other movies, it's swagger. These movies are swaggery. And I think it has a lot to do with Robert Downey Jr. in those first Iron Man movies, setting kind of the template for who these characters will be. And then the Avengers, like they're all the Joss Whedon is so good at that dialogue. And they can be funny and sometimes self-deprecating, but always with the swagger underneath it. I think it's one of the reasons that Mark Ruffalo works so well in those movies is because he's not that. Like he desperately doesn't want to turn into the big powerful person. Mm-hmm. Whereas everybody else is sort of like they kind of revel in their power. And this is a character who is becoming. She is a character who is, it's not that she's, I don't read her as having necessarily like a crisis of identity, although she is like trying to figure out who she's trying to figure out who she's going to be. And part of that is unlocking who she was in the past. And I think that her sarcasm and that sort of self-assured quality, like she's cocky, but not in the way that, not with like swagger cocky. She's just like, I can do it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, like I got this.
Before all this happened, because she wouldn't have been a, you know, testing experimental
things. Right.
And I think that we don't know a lot about how she and her best friend got there and how they were chosen and who all was involved, but no one was rooting for them.
Right.
In the way that they're in their little worlds, people are kind of rooting for. She never had a Pepper Potts.
Right. Right.
Right. She had to be scrappy to get what she needed done in the same way that she also didn't have an island of fellow warriors.
Right. Yes. Yes. Her.
She had to build a family. She has a chosen family that was very small because they were a limited number of people who could do what she was doing and opportunities for people like her to do that thing.
Mm-hmm. Right. And what I think the movie tips its hand to all of this when the one time that she does do the hands on the hips superhero stance is near the end of the movie as she's standing on the porch of the house with the little girl and trying to decide what colors of costume she should wear. And it holds on that once she decides the colors, she then stands there. Like a shot holds for an extra long time where you kind of go, I see. This is like, I'm not standing this way athwart some, you know, villain or in the middle of some victory. It's like, I am showing this young woman what's possible.
Yeah.
The movie is a little kind of like, it comes at oblique angles at all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Like it's not sort of laying anything out directly. It's sort of coming at it from the side, which is why I think there are all these reversals of who is like, who can you trust? And it all gets back to the thing you're saying about that she has always had to rely on herself, mm-hmm. and a very small group of trusted, like her sort of most trusted sort of people, which then, you know, that trust is misplaced when she is on, you know, in Jude Law. But when she finds that family that she had, it unlocks that something in her that's not like, now I'm going to swagger. It's like, I'm going to assume my power, right? Like I'm going to sort of become this almost like magical, like really a magical being, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that the movie is so smart in, and she, I think her performance will hold up really well over time as people, I think what's going to happen is people are going to watch the next Avengers movie that she will have a big part in. And then they'll say, oh, and they'll go back and watch this one again in like 3 years and say, you know what? She was really building to something in this. And she was, you know, it's almost in the filmmakers who made this, Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck, a husband and wife team of directors who've made a bunch of indie movies and then have done some great work on TV. And like, when I say indie movies, I mean like really indie. Like they were sort of coming out with films when I was in film school in New York, and were these sort of new indie New York directors, and working extremely small budgets and to have sort of control over the thing that they were telling. And I felt so much of that in this movie, as much as you could fit probably in a Marvel movie, that, and part of it had to do with how they were directing her. I'm going on. I thought she was great in this movie. And I think the people who don't, I wonder if they will feel differently, and maybe not, maybe this is just my taste, but I think they might feel differently down the road looking back at this movie.
And so if, folks, you have found this podcast 3 years later and you've just come around, we welcome you.
Yes.
Join us in appreciating this character, this portrayal, and this fandom. No, no hard feelings. You're welcome here. This is a safe space.
Yes, I'm sorry. You're right. I'm sorry.
No,
was I being too harsh?
I just wanted to set that tone.
Yeah, yeah.
For the future, for the next generation of fans. But no. I agree. I didn't know that about the directors. But I think this is it's still a giant story. It still spans galaxies and species and all that, but it is a more intimate origin, if you will, again,
yeah.
Comparing to your Guardians, your Wonder Woman, your kind of other, even, yeah, I mean, Captain America, who starts like literally very small, then punching Nazis in the face. Like, it's just, this is different. And I think this is, but still has those things of valuing, you know, independence, but also being part of a team. And there's plenty of America in it. And like, it checks the boxes, but it does it in a different way. And you used a word I can't think of right now. All I can think of is serpentine. Where it's kind of, it's bobbing and weaving at you a little bit. And I can see how that's not what was expected. But I, in the same way, the dumb cat, like the cat could have been super stupid.
Super stupid. Yeah.
And I think if they had done any tricks with the cats any more than they did, it would have been. But like, it was set up enough that she has some sort of it's not like, oh, I have a connection with this cat, but like, she likes the cat. She appreciates the cat being there. Samuel L. Jackson's being cute with the cat, as I would be if there suddenly was an animal in the middle of what was going on. And the other guy is like, stay away. That is an evil creature, which then again, depending on, I mean, it's a cat. So like, that is true. But,
that is, to be fair, that is accurate.
To be fair, it's just a cat. I assume all cats do that. Am I wrong? but yeah, I mean, I think it was just enough that they threw the gag in there and then they threw the gag in there again and it was good. Can we fast forward? So good guys are bad guys, bad guys are good guys. Jude Law is terrible. Can we get to some of the bigger battles?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because I've never said that before and I'll never say that again.
Yeah, exactly.
I do have a complaint and a half.
Okay.
It's related. So I haven't gone back and I'm not a troll. So I haven't really done all kinds of research. I appreciated every bit of 90s music. I don't know that it was all like in the right time. Mm-hmm. Did you feel that at all?
You mean in terms of like the right time in the movie or the right time period to have, or like which way do you mean?
When I hear the 90s music playing as the backdrop to what's going on, I sort of thought of it as like in her head.
Oh, funny.
If she's from that era, then that's her like hype music.
Ah, interesting. Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
So I haven't gone back to check and see if the year that they put her in, because then like she blips out and becomes Cree. Right. She would have no other context.
Right, right.
For pop music. So like
right.
Some of it, I had questions in it of like, oh, would this be right or not? And then I didn't care because it was just fun, because I have loved Just a Girl by No Doubt since that time, as you may recall.
I do indeed.
I used so many bits of as my answering machine messages on the adding to the line. God bless the 90s. But okay, so it's not a complaint. It's just more of a question of kind of consistency, but I don't know. I don't care. I do, but I don't. In the moment I cared, and now I don't care as much. it does, and especially with this character, here is my complaint.
Okay.
Put your damn hair up. Every time. And I think as a professional pilot, why would you have your hair in your face when you were trying to get shit done?
Mm-hmm.
This and this spans all. I mean, this is an issue I've had with many beloved characters. I have this issue with Buffy.
We talked about it on our She's the Man episode.
Thank you. With sports, with She's the Man. I think I've had it with Katniss Everdeen from time to time.
Like, sure.
Put your hair up. And so when her powers ignite and she gets the mohawk, the magical mohawk, I did love that. But for most of the movie, she's like getting into fights with her hair in her face. And it just, and it's not, to me, it's not, I promise you, it's not gendered. It's not, she's a girl, she should put her hair up. It's anyone who's trying to fight with that amount of hair in their face. Wouldn't you just constantly be trying to get it? You had long hair for a minute.
I'm imagining you tossing scrunchies at the screen I haven't seen Aquaman, but I'm sure it's going to be the same thing as he's like trying to swim and fight or whatever underwater and all that long hair.
If you're yourself underwater, at least you've got that behind you.
Well, unless you're swimming backward, you're not just always moving forward, or even when he's on land. I'm not seeing those movies, but I'm assuming that I would feel the same way, that like, put your hair up.
So anyway, that is my, I think,
just tactically, point. Just tactically.
Yes. It just,
yeah.
Even you don't have anything, just grab it, just tie it in a knot. Just do a little, I mean, there are things you could do. She was on Earth for long enough. I think, her best friend or a kind of a niece, if you will, could have braided it. I mean, shoot, Samuel L. Jackson could have braided it. If anyone who is standing next to her could have helped her.
Yeah, Clark Gregg, I'm sure, would have been great.
Clark Gregg could have braided her hair.
That's a scene I want to see. That's a cut scene I want to see.
I love it. but in any case, I felt this way in the film and have been waiting to talk about it. Not this. I'm done setting up my
next thing.
But so when they're the pre-final battle, when they're it is the big battle, but it's not the Jude Law one. It's the one when they're in the spaceship still, and she is giving her family time to get out.
Right, right.
And in the course of that, like, she was prepared to take that on. I'm trying to remember. Tell me if I'm wrong. Even before she kind of realized her powers were growing and,
that's
and
right.
focusing.
That's right. I think that's
that,
right. Yeah.
That to me is really compelling. And mm-hmm. then I have not had that much fun watching a fight scene. Mm-hmm. You know, I do not like the fight scenes.
You do not.
I don't like the sounds of fighting. I don't like watching it. It just, it's a bit of a snooze for me. It's just not what I'm interested in. But this sure. was more compelling than any. I can't pick a scene I can think of other than this that I've enjoyed. Except, and I'm sorry to go back again to Buffy, there is that thing that happens when kind of all the identities are coming together. And the bits you've seen separated all kind of focus in. And she mm-hmm. each time she's looking up, she's standing up, she's making fists. Mm-hmm. That is very similar to a montage from the very end of Buffy.
Oh, really?
Which gets me very emotional. I'm not going to lie.
I got emotional in the theater. My son looked over me and said, "What's wrong?" Yeah. Look what's happening.
I'll find this clip and I'll send it to you, Tobin, because there's a thing at the end of Buffy where any of us who could have been a Slayer get the power. So there's a whole thing of like, there's only one Slayer at a time.
Yeah.
And then spoilers all around. So anyone who's currently watching Buffy with me, please turn this off. Let's fast forward 2 minutes. Anyone who had the potential gets the powers. Mm-hmm. So then you see young women from all over, from all
places. I love that.
And it's so powerful. And so that was very reminiscent of that for me. And I'm not upset that it reminded me of it. What I loved was that it did remind me that I had had that feeling before.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
Right. And so that,
sure.
then that really kind of added to my, how it hit me as she was kicking ass. But the combination of her identity is really kind of all coalescing.
Yes. Yes.
The fun music. And then her, you know, she's saving her friends, but she's also seems to be having a really good time figuring out what she's capable of.
Yes, right, right.
Having fun figuring out what you're capable of was so enjoyable in a way that those same actions, that same fight otherwise wouldn't have been.
That's so smart. I mean, that makes me think that one of the things that was so cool about the original Tobey Maguire Spider-Man was or any of those kind of origin stories is them like discovering the limits of their power and like what they can do now and all that. There's something very satisfying about that. But the issue with those is that you get that 15, 20 minutes, 30 minutes into the movie, and then they have to like, now they're going to go fight bad guys or whatever. And this is the whole movie's leading up to this point. So she is at the very last moment as she's the thing I had down in my notes was that she realizes she's been her all along. Like she's not fight, you know, the way you said it so nice that the identities are coalescing, but they've always been part of her. Like she's, you know, the test pilot's the same as the Kree warriors, the same as, you know, it's all her. It's just that now she understands where she came from and that moment happens. They say that for the end of this movie, instead of like a third of the way into the movie is part of what makes for me anyway, those last fights so satisfying.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about the timeline that way, but you're right. And it's been so long since I fell asleep watching the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, but I'm sure I fell asleep after that part. Another time, the bobbin and the weavin, right? They're taking
the
origin story and I think making us uncomfortable because it's not going in the order that we think it should go. Mm-hmm. And then the very, very end fight with Jude Law, I was fine with, you know, I don't think it didn't knock my socks off, but it was kind of in line with what then based on the other thing, what I was expecting.
I like that it's so brief.
Yeah.
And I like that he begins to try and do the thing he's doing at the beginning, which is to psych her out. And she's just like, she's just done with it. You know?
Absolutely. But she interrupts him.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I don't, even this, I don't need from you anymore.
Yeah.
And
yes,
that I really liked having any of us that have had to hear someone we are done talking to continue to talk. Or like think that this is the moment when I'm really gonna get you or like one of you. Just like, no, that's not it. Thanks for playing though. So that would be satisfying.
And he's trying to, in that moment, take credit for her, for what she's become. I mean, it is so brilliant. It's so smart what they've done with this movie that at that moment we are all seeing what Carol Danvers and Vers and women all over the world are like, as these men are taking credit for this thing that she has done on her own. And she's just has had enough. And I found it so satisfying. Yes.
I agree. Could you feel, were the other people in the audience having a good time? How is
my crowd was, there was applause as the movie ended.
Nice.
So, it felt like it was, what about yours? What about your crowd? Were they into it?
It was the earliest matinee of a day. So there weren't,
it's one of my favorite times to go to the movies. I love it. I love it.
So there weren't that many people. And I was kind of set up to be snarky, as is my fallback.
You're kidding me.
I know. But the people behind me were so loud before the movie started.
Oh.
But that's their time, right? There's nothing else going on.
Yeah, okay.
But it's also just like, I don't need to know this much about your business. And like, I already don't agree with you on everything you're saying.
Right.
But so they had been so loud at the beginning that I was kind of set up not to like them. But then there were like gasps and things at the right moments toward the end.
Cool.
And
so cool.
Like they sort of won me back. I still didn't want to be friends, but like they sort of won me back.
But they didn't get the stink eye after the movie.
No, but I was ready. Like I was prepared to turn around and just like, and it's a small town, so like it's not a good idea. But just because you don't know, likely this is someone you'll run into again. So again, if you're a fan, really, thanks for behaving yourself in the movie.
I found in my research before, when I was looking for synopses, I found a couple other things that if I could just share one of them with you really quickly. There's a interview that Brie Larson was giving about the movie, and it gets at two things, one that you mentioned and one that I sort of want to talk about, which is her relationship with Maria Rambeau, her friend, her you know, like the other pilot that's in this movie. And you were talking about them coming through the military together, and there's something about those scenes to me. There was parts of those moments where I was wondering if in the history of the Marvel comics they had ever been, and so let me run through my whole thought process. I was like, oh, is this like, this feels like such a deep and intimate connection. I wonder if there's something more than just platonic love between these two. And I think you can read the movie in interesting ways about that, but I think that is missing. That's like over missing the point, right? That's like saying, well, since these people are so intimately connected, they have to have some kind of sexual history,
right?
which is like completely unfair and, you know, like misses the point of the whole thing. What that illuminated for me was that I am unused to seeing this kind of like this level of intimacy between really kind of anybody on screen. Like I love friendships that get that deep.
Yeah.
And it's, we see it so rarely that I think, you know, my story brain tries to code it as something else. But I just want to read one thing that Brie Larson said about that. That also then touches on exactly what you were saying. Like she's sort of reiterating that. She says, she's talking about these two characters. She said, whatever they've gone through together, going through the military training together, being the only women and using each other to lean on each other and using that as a support, using that support as a recognition of her experience is really special. Of course, I think they'd be friends outside of that, but that really tight knit bond is family. This is the love of the movie. This is love found again. This is the person to go to the ends of the earth to fight, to defend. And to me, it's so natural. I went and saw the movie, and an hour later, they were like, Maria is the love. It's not something that we've made a big deal about, but it feels so natural. That love is so strong. The movie shifts when she's on screen because there's a level of power she commands.
Yeah.
And I really felt that. And I get a little misty thinking about it now. Like there's something, I think they captured something really special. The Lashana Lynch, I think, is so good. And like this is a level of buying into a character who's not one of the superheroes that we don't see a lot, or there is not an opportunity for a lot of that kind of earnestness mm-hmm. among other characters. And she is just, I'm feeling everything is, she feels like a real person mm-hmm. who this person has shown back up in her life. And what that, all the sort of conflicting emotions that happen there and that love, I love the two of them together. What did you think?
I agree. I'm certainly not going to disagree with you. It's funny because it's a little bit the opposite of Ocean's 8, where I was putting a romantic layer over the Sandra Bullock, Kate Blanchett, that seemed to be not something that you had read in that at the time.
I like that reading though.
Okay, thank you. I did too.
Yeah.
And so I didn't have that inclination, but I did. I absolutely 100% agree with you with that, the intensity of their bond.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you bringing up the point of it with someone outside of the supers, because yes, you know, we know what brought, oh gosh, who is it? I don't even care anymore. Black Widow. No, what is Scarlett Johansson?
Scarlett Johansson, yeah, Black Widow.
And Hulk together has a lot to do with their backstory, but also their what they're dealing with as heroes and all that. Like,
right.
This is the same as that, right? Mm-hmm. But it's when they were both humans,
right?
and you can see those intense relationships in the supers and extrapolate that to what it would be like, you know. Or which one of your friends is which, you know, BuzzFeed tells us every day, which one of our friends is which superhero. But to see that expressed in the context of two, you know, kick-ass military ladies is awesome. And yeah, you would, I mean, in those circumstances, you just, yeah, you will end up that close.
right. Exactly. Right.
And then, you know, we don't know. I don't remember. I don't feel like we know anything about Carol's family of origin, really, not much.
This
is the family that she had, and that she, not purposefully, but did, you know, abandoned.
Right.
That, yeah, there's just a lot and a lot of trust that has to be gained back and a lot to go through when she shows up again and where they end up, I think is really special too.
So, yeah.
I got no complaints, which also I don't say very often.
No, you don't. Yeah.
Hey Tobe, do you want to play a game?
Yes, but only if we can have a special guest with us.
Who's our special guest?
We have an amazing special guest with us, a very generous special guest with us. We have one of our sort of favorite Patreon members, Sean Flynn, is with us for the game today. Hi, Sean.
Hi.
Hello and welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be joining you.
And this is part of the benefit package that you have.
Yeah. I didn't know I was signing up for so much, but I'm happy to help. And yeah, it's been good so far.
And also, in all seriousness, we do really appreciate all of our Patreon members, and they make the show possible, you in particular, Sean. So thank you.
Oh, no problem.
So before we start the true body of the game, which I have crafted over several minutes yesterday and today, I have a Captain Marvel specific question. This is our warm up round. No points will be awarded. Are you ready?
Okay. Ready.
Hopefully those who are listening have seen Captain Marvel. I don't want to spoilery anything, but there is a very special pet in Captain Marvel, right? Goose the cat, or is it a cat? My question to the two of you who are dedicated listeners of the podcast is, what would Goose the Cat turn into if he were in another one of the movies we've covered? So what would Goose be in A Wrinkle in Time or in The Contender or in Aliens. Or in She's the Man.
Well, it's really too bad that there wasn't in Aliens because, of course, of the cat in Alien, which had no special powers, was just a cat. But would have been cool if there was a cat that at maybe even had these same powers and like, you know, the tentacles came out and it ate the alien. That would have been awesome.
Or maybe it did. And that just got thrown on the cutting room floor.
And, yeah, true. Yeah. True.
I mean, wait, does it still honestly, have to be a pet? Well, not necessarily. I mean, I'm thinking if the dog in Babadook had these powers, he would have gotten along a lot better, I think.
Oh, for sure. I see. I thought you were saying, if we put this cat into one of the things, what would it turn into? But you mean like any animal in any of the things that we've watched?
I think we should be animal wide, just because I don't particularly remember cats. So I think
it
would
have to be an animal.
What, you tell me what you're thinking and I will congratulate you on your creativity.
Because I think, what was his name? The little kid in League of Their Own would be great. Yes.
Stillwell,
darling. Yes.
Yeah, I think he would be a great alien. I think that's a great answer. Excellent.
Okay, I'm going to change mine then, because if we're following this logic, then I think that Sam Elliott's Kermit in The Contender would turn into an actual frog.
Or
okay,
Sam Elliott's mustache.
Well, he didn't have a mustache in the movie. You see?
I still haven't watched The Contender. So,
yeah.
Get off my podcast. I'm just kidding.
No, we're totally kidding. Please keep enjoying.
Kidding. Well, excellent. I think between Stillwell, Sam Elliott, and the dog from Babadook, we've certainly enhanced some of the content. I don't know what that was from our previous endeavors. All right. That was a great warm up. No points were awarded.
No. No points were warranted.
No.
Yeah, I feel like we didn't really play to the nature.
You did a
of
great job.
Okay.
Okay. Our game today has two rounds, and multiple points can be achieved in each round. I will be the points keeper, so don't worry about that. Round number one is all about the order of things. I will give you three events. I will ask each of you to put them in chronological order.
Mm.
And I will award points as necessary. I chose three events so that you didn't all just pick the opposite of what the other person picked.
Okay.
Okay. We could do it call-in style, but I feel like three gives you enough. So I would encourage you, if you are a visual person, to have a little notepad or something, because I'm going to give you three events per round. Scratch paper is encouraged. Googling is prohibited.
Okay.
Let's have a fair game here. Although fair game is not on the list. Okay. Here are your first three events. Please put these in chronological order. Event A. A little movie called Jurassic Park was released in theaters. Event B. The president at the time signs the Americans with Disabilities Act, banning discrimination based on disability and demanding public accommodations, employment, and transportation options. And event C. Tim Berners-Lee distributes files that explain his idea for a World Wide Web.
What was the last one?
In what order did those three occur?
Wow. Okay. I'm just writing this down here. Okay. Wow. Sean, do you want to go first?
Ooh. Well, I know which year Jurassic Park came out because it is my favorite movie.
Yay. You're welcome back to the podcast.
You. Thank you. I want to say it was C-A-B.
Okay, I'm going to go CBA. The World Wide Web paper, American Disabilities Act, and the Jurassic Park release.
Yeah.
All right. Just for listeners, there was a 5-minute delay in there where Sean and Tobin just talked about Laura Dern. For several minutes.
And that was only to say, okay, let's talk about her again later off mic, because there's more to say than just yes, 5 minutes.
Exactly.
All right. In actuality, the answer was BCA. The ADA was signed in 1990. Tim Berners-Lee told us about the World Wide Web in 1991, followed by Jurassic Park in 1993.
What?
Wow. So this is all 90s, like the movie.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. This is all 90s, like the movie.
You see, there is a quiz. This isn't just a history quiz. This
no, isn't like, I thought that was clear.
The Magna Carta was signed.
I was wondering how far we were going to go back, because if it was like a full encompassing Marvel thing, like, I don't know that much about World War II yet. So,
yeah. Okay, I'm with you now. I'm with you now.
I know a lot about Norse mythology now, though.
So here's how I'm scoring it. Tobin had a letter in the right place.
Okay.
Right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So he gets a point for that. And Sean had two that followed the pattern, but were not in the right place. So Sean gets half a point for that.
All right. Okay.
All right. Are you ready?
Sure.
For round two.
Yes.
I gotta put my ABC in there. Okay. Please put these things in order. Nancy Kerrigan suffers a physical assault while leaving a practice rink. This is A.
Okay.
B, the Counting Crows have a hit song in Mr. Jones, which lead singer Adam Duritz still claims is not about his penis. And C, a federal building in Oklahoma City was bombed, killing more than 150 people. Period.
Boy, that kind of took a dark turn there at the end.
Yeah.
It did. I'm sorry.
You jumped straight from...
It started pretty dark, too.
Song to bombing.
Yeah, to tragedy. Yeah, okay. oh, my gosh. Okay. I think I have it.
Okay.
I think this one is... CAB, the Oklahoma City bombing, then Nancy Kerrigan, and then Mr. Jones.
Sean?
I think he's right, but I have to go separate because I played a win. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ACB.
Kerrigan bombing Jones?
I don't feel great about it.
All right. The answer is BAC. Mr. Jones, I have clocked in at 1993. Nancy Kerrigan, January of 1994. Oklahoma City, April of 1994.
Wow.
Tricky with any year question there, but what, you know, 94 was a turbulent year. So with that in mind, once again, Tobin gets 1 point, and Sean gets half a point.
I'll take it.
I like the way this is going.
Okay. This is the final question of put these things in order.
Okay.
Option A. Iceland saw Good Will Hunting in the theaters 9 times.
Right.
Option B. 39 members of the Heaven's Gate organization committed suicide.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
And C, Tickle Me Elmo took over the world.
And can you relate these three things? Oh. Okay, I went first last time, so I think
Sean should go first this time. Nine times?
Did I hear you say that right?
Now, yes. Now think about that. Yeah. Maybe it might take a minute to see something 9 times.
Wait, I don't. Is that a clue, or you just want us to think about watching that 9 times? I saw Jurassic Park 9 times in the theater.
Right. Yes.
Okay.
So no, it's, right, it,
that's
it
all
is
we're getting
a clue. or?
I mean, it just, it is the only of our answers that has a time span involved. However, there's nothing in the middle of it. The time it took me to see that 9 times, there's nothing else that I've listed that would get in the way of that.
Okay. All right. Okay. Gotcha.
Oh, that is a clue. Okay. Okay. That is a clue.
Oh.
Yeah. I think.
I don't know. I don't get the clue. Wrong. Okay. I'm going to go with C. No. That's a trick.
No. I wrote it down already.
Well, if it's written down, it's written in stone.
Yeah.
I'm going to go CBA then.
Okay. So that's Tickle Me Elmo, Heaven's Gate, Suicide, and Good Will Hunting 9 times. I'm going to say BCA, The Suicide, Tickle Me Elmo, and Good Will Hunting 9 times.
Sean comes out of that with 3 points.
Whoa!
Tickle Me Elmo, I have attributed to 1996, although it was, sold widely for years there. Heaven's Gate is January 1997. And then Good Will Hunting came out December of 97, and I saw it well into 98.
Wow.
Because it came out in December.
Right.
And then that was right when we got a discount theater. So it was then that spring break that I saw it a bunch of times.
Wow.
That was that clue. So I'm sorry, Tobin. No points awarded to you. Wait, no, you get 1 point because you had a Good Will Hunting last. And Sean gets 3 points.
Wow.
Making it a total of 4-3.
Woo.
Going into the next round. The next round, the rules are completely different. Are you ready?
we have to put these things out of order.
That would be awesome. No, but this is speaking of Tickle Me Elmo, that's my segue. I have 3 questions about the price of 90s toys. We're going Price is Right style. And as the point leader, Sean gets to go first in the first question. So please guess the number of American dollars without going over. What did Tickle Me Elmo cost in 1996?
Oh, I'm going to say $24.99, Bob.
Okay. Tobin?
I'm going to say $27.
I knew it.
Tobin snuck in there and stole it right out front of you. It was $28.99. Great guesses, both of you. So, Tobin, you are won that point, so you will go first next.
Okay.
How much did a Tamagotchi, name brand, not knockoff, cost in 1997?
$18.
Okay. Sean?
$19.
I'm sorry, no points can be awarded there, as the retail price I have listed is $17.99.
Oh. Ouch.
Oh. But great guesses, both of you.
Oh, ouch.
All right. The score is tied. I have one more question. If you both beef it again, I do have a final question as well. In the case of a tie, my last, who went first that time?
Yes, it is my turn.
Okay. How much did a Furby cost in 1998?
Now that was the thing that kind of jumped around and was really furry, and it looked like a cross between a gerbil and a chicken, right?
Yeah, it looked to me like a pre-gremlin.
Okay, like a Mogwai.
Thank you, a Mogwai. Didn't know what that word was, but yes, it sat on a shelf. It was, I think, listed as the first interactive. It would respond to you.
Right.
It was Alexa before there was Alexa. Oh, shit. Now I turned Alexa on. Never mind. Go back to sleep.
And you just ordered a Furby.
Okay. I'm
all
going
right.
to say.
Furby in 1998. Mm-hmm.
$31.
$1.
Oh, that's an excellent guess. However, coming in at 35.
Yes.
Sean is our winner.
Hey.
You had to do the $1
with
at some point in time. It just had
at some point.
Yeah,
right?
Somebody had to do a $1. Yeah.
With a score of 5-4. Now, what I would love, folks, Sean, excellent work. You have won the
Thank
game.
You.
But I would love it if both of you, in the spirit of good, clean, fun competition, would simultaneously answer the final question, which was, please do your best dial-up internet impression.
Okay.
Okay.
Do you want to count? Can you count us down?
I will. 3, 2, 1, dial-up. Nice work. Thank you.
That is audio gold.
I hope everyone enjoyed that. I hope everyone played along. If I was wrong, tell the internet. They're the ones who gave me the information.
Thank you, internet.
Thank you, internet. Thank you so much, Sean. That was so much fun.
Well, thank you. This has been great. And I enjoy hearing this. When it comes out, and I'm glad to be supporting you guys. You make me happy every time I listen to the show.
Aww.
So I kind of save up some episodes for bad days, and yeah. And you say very nice things about me sometimes. So.
Yeah, you give us enough
you
money.
Say
we
very
will say
embarrassing
nice things
about me sometimes too. Though,
but. That's true too. But at least once it was non-identifying information. You're
right,
just
that's true. Nobody knows that I cried during Whip It.
Oh no! You've outed yourself.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Oh yeah. Anytime. I would love to come back.
Yay. We'll make that happen.
Keep paying and we'll bring you back.
This is a pay to play.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. All right.
Love it. All right. Wasn't that a fun game?
That was a great game, Iceland.
Now is the time where we subvert expectations. Now's the time where we give our closing thoughts. Is this film progressive or regressive? Is this a step forward or a step back for fearless women in front of and behind the camera? Hey, Tobin, what did you think?
I think this movie is progressive. I think it shows that there are women at all, sort of all levels of the production in this movie. And I think that it serves them all well. Aizen, what about you?
I agree. I would refer you back to everything we've said in the hour preceding.
See above.
Yeah, right. I'm a fan. I look forward to seeing it again. And I look this character will make me see the next Marvel film. Mm. And I haven't seen the last 3 or 4.
Yeah, this has made me this and seeing her in the ad that recently came out of her in the like talking to the Avengers or whatever, that has me excited. Like I was dragging my heels and now I've got some excitement to go see the next one. Yep.
So
well said.
Tobin, what are we going to watch next?
Speaking of next, our next movie is going to be Obvious Child. And we're going to have that episode for you in 2 weeks on April 30th. So if you have not seen it, do yourself a favor, get thee to a streaming service.
It's quick, and folks, it's a shorty.
And yeah, check out Obvious Child and we'll talk about that at the end of the month. Aislinn, where can people find you online and how is your show going?
Oh my goodness. People can find me online at SassyNerdMT. That's the best way to find me for both complaining about anything I've said here today or to connect with my other show. My other show on the Cage Club Network is called Why Aren't We All? It is a short series where I have short conversations with folks who have a belief, a lifestyle, a practice that helps them get through the day. And we find out about it and then we imagine a world
in which everyone did what they do and see what that might look like. There are two episodes up currently. It's a once a month situation for this season. And the first episode is Why Aren't We All Vegan? Which is a lot of fun. And
yes.
The second episode is Why Aren't We All Playing Bridge? Which is also a lot of fun, but in a very different way.
Did you know that we're doing a vaguely vegan thing at our household?
I knew that there was something vegan-y about since New Year's. In conclusion, yes, but I don't know the specifics of your practice.
We don't need to talk about it now necessarily, but I found it interesting that we were in the middle of this listening to that conversation, and I urge everybody to go listen to your show because it is so good. And we're gonna do we need to tease the
I have some exciting guests coming up. However, this month is real rough for me in that I am traveling a ton. And so in order to stay on my schedule keep our producers happy, this month meaning for May, the episode of Why Aren't We All is going to be about me. So we're going to switch it around. Host will become guest and Tobin will ask me to share what it is that helps me get through the day. And what a world would look like if we all practice what they preach.
And I cannot wait.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be very different than either vegan or playing bridge.
Or bridge.
Hey, Tobin, where can folks find you?
People can find me on Twitter at Tobin Addington, and you can find us on Twitter at contenders_pod or on Patreon at thecontenderspod.com. Special thanks to our members who've joined at the marquee level or above, Sean Flynn, yay, and Jeff Addington. Become a member today, connect with other listeners, and support our show.
We here at The Contenders are proud members of the Cage Club Podcast Network. You can explore all their great shows at cageclub.me, and you can keep tabs on all the Cage Club happenings on Twitter at @CageClubPod. As always, thank you so much for listening. I'm Aislinn Addington.
I'm Tobin Addington, and we'll see you next time on The Contenders.
So, real quick, the lead singer of Counting Crows is Adam Duritz, right?
That's right.
Okay, great.
I mean, yeah. Oh,
God. Okay.
I watched Captain Marvel last night, so I'm ready to go.
Oh, God, you're going to be so disappointed.
You're a lot more fresh.
This has
than
nothing to do with Captain Marvel, does it?
Nope.
Pretty cool.